good evening or afternoon.
Hello and welcome to Kangria, home of Canada's cream region. My name is Luke Smith.
And I'm Sebastian.
We had a bit of confusion there as to who is starting the show.
Just sitting here staring at each other like, are you going to go or not? And then, oh, wait a minute, it's my turn.
Oh, my days. Anyways, I am slightly recovered. I want to say thanks for the messages of Speedy Getwell that folks... thought they were going to send me and didn't get around to, because that's just how it is.
Was that on the Twitter?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, anything, really.
Or anything, yeah, really. Okay.
Absolutely.
Good.
I am on the mend. I apologize for my gravelly voice from the last couple of episodes. And it looks like I've happily infected Sebastian with my winter cold or spring cold. So you'll be on the... on the lurgy end of that.
The lurgy end. Yes. Currently, it's just a bunch of sinus headaches. You just put a hot towel on your face and then use a neti pot, and it's super gross, but then you feel good. That's how it goes. Actually, there's something I messaged you earlier on this week, because I saw something, and I really wanted to tell you, but I was going to wait until we recorded.
So yeah, you told me, you're like, there's something funny happened, and you wouldn't tell me.
Because I like starting episodes with things that are mildly related to what we actually do.
We actually have four of them today. I'm actually quite excited about our mildly related stories.
So as you know, I don't like it when... they change characters instead of pushing existing ones. So I didn't like it when they made Thor into a lady in the comics, because Lady Thor already exists. Her name is Valkyrie. Mm. And Valkyrie's been around since like the 70s. Why didn't they just push Valkyrie? Like, I find it a little bit belittling, because it's like you don't have faith in your female characters that you just take a male character and convert them. Like, I find that a little bit belittling all around. Yeah. So I like it when they take existing characters and then push them. And then I've been watching Doom Patrol recently, and there is a character who is considered to be one of the best queer characters in Marvel and DC.
Now, Doom Patrol you can find on Crave. I think it's on the Bell Network.
It will be coming to Netflix once the season's over as well. Mm. I think that's been confirmed. And there's this character who is absolutely fascinating, who's been around forever, who's always been gender non-binary, genderqueer, sort of pansexual. This individual's abilities include teleporting, creating things out of thin air just by imagining it, like a little bit overpowered. Character's name is Danny, and Danny is a street. Danny the
like
Street is four blocks of self-aware street. And Danny teleports around the world, just plopping into cities as, like, all of a sudden the streets changed. And, like, now Danny is there, and Danny is self-aware, and Danny communicates through, like, billboards. And you can see clips of... they didn't do it in the show, but they do it in the comics where, like, steam will come out of vents and the steam will... like spell things like hello and welcome to Danny and things like that. And they put Danny the Street into a show. They maintained Danny as being genderqueer. Everybody in the show used gender neutral pronouns except for the homophobes in the show. It was really, really, really well done. And I was just so stoked. I never thought in a million years that anybody would actually put Danny the Street into any media.
Well,
and not only did they do it, but they nailed it. It was so fascinating. And they gave it so much dignity. It was great. I loved it.
Now, there's been a lot of pressure on Marvel and DC to include a gay character. I think there was...
Or to depict, like, in most current timelines, Iceman is gay. Colossus is either gay or bisexual in most timelines. And I say timelines because if you're in the comics, they keep having these like universe fractures, or they have reboots or whatever. Yeah. And they have like there's about I think a couple dozen versions of Storm, for example, because Storm's been there from the beginning. So Storm is in almost every universe. So you can actually see like a poster of every version of Storm, and the popular ones are always the Mohawk Storm, because she's pretty kick-ass.
So you mentioned Valkyrie. Now, Valkyrie was in Thor Ragnarok, the movie.
I don't watch comic book movies anymore because they infuriate me. They watch the shows because the shows are good, but the movies infuriate me.
And people were very annoyed that the sort of bi storyline that we thought was going to happen never happened.
Mm.
They refused to acknowledge Valkyrie as bisexual, and essentially just, like, omitted it. Now... Marvel has been doing these movies, this series for, was it like 10 years? There have been 22 movies in the series.
If you include the first X-Men movies, yeah. Which, yeah, so that's 98, I think, the first X-Men came out.
Yeah, well, in particular, the cinematic universe of...
like Avengers.
Yeah, exactly.
The current Iron Man, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so there's been 22 of the movies. It's been going for a solid decade.
Yeah.
And from day one, people were like, you know what would be really cool? If we had like a gay superhero. And they've done everything.
Or a gay superhero that already exists and just put them in the background holding someone's hand. You know, it's like, you know, season one of Star Trek Next Generation, mm-hmm. where you just had men in skirts walking around in the background. They never, like, the studio blocked Gene Roddenberry from having openly queer characters, but they had zero restrictions on what he could do with the background. Mm-hmm. So there's all sorts of things happening in the background. You go to 10 Forward and you see, like, men and women holding hands at the... in the bar, and it's just fantastic. But that's one of the reasons why I really like Ryan Reynolds, because he told the studio that he would not make Deadpool unless they would give him the freedom to play him as pansexual, which he is in the comic. And it took them forever. The number one thing is, if they do that, they have to make it R-rated, because for some reason, the moment you have a pansexual character who's fully clothed and not doing anything sexy, it is R-rated. Well, it's the blood and the swearing, but yeah.
There were other things,
but he insisted on that, and that's one of the reasons why, like, you know, Ryan Reynolds is my hero.
So to loop it back to Avengers. Now, the Endgame is the end of the whole cinematic universe, and you're thinking, wow, maybe after a decade and 22 movies, maybe they'll put somebody who isn't just straight in this.
Right.
All of the love triangles, all of the love scenes are straight. All of everything, everybody's straight. And think, okay, maybe. Now, the Russo twins, who are the co-directors, I don't know if they're twins, but I think that the Russo brothers, Anthony and Joe Russo, really wanted to make sure that they included an openly gay character. They wanted it so much that they didn't bring in any of those gay superheroes at all.
That already exist. That have been forgotten by time.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. But what they did, Joe Russo, one of the co-directors, played a role, a 30-second role, where, quick spoiler alert, Captain America is at a group for people who've had people disappear by Thanos.
Okay.
Yeah, he's at a group. Everyone's like, oh my God. I haven't seen it yet. I'm going to see it tomorrow, but...
I just watched the first Guardians of the Galaxy movie last night. So this
You're
is,
way behind.
I don't care. And not only that, but the ending of that movie infuriated.
I'm going to finish this sentence, though. Otherwise, you never let me finish the damn point.
With the power of friendship. It was so... Oh.
So anyway, Captain America's in this group. Everyone's like, oh my God. And Joe Russo, who's the co-director, plays this, you know, essentially unnamed other participant in the group, who says that I went on a date with him and he vanished. And that is it. That is the full stop. I have fully captured 10 years and 22 movies and several billion dollars worth of Marvel's attempt at a gay-inclusive movie.
Here's the problem with Marvel and all things owned by Disney. They make 2/3 of their income overseas. And, like, whenever they push a character who is black or gay, that movie does poorly, especially in China. So a lot of the diversity issues, if you want to see diversity coming out of Hollywood, any studio that is targeting the overseas market, you are never going to see it until and unless we help with progress in those countries. If you want to see queer content, you got to watch the indie stuff. And fair enough, because the indie stuff has actual, like, you know, character development and story structure and good writing and in-depth characters, and they don't save the day with the power of friendship and a Care Bear stare using a glowy, glowy purple stone. If you want to see a good, like, actual cinematic film, between quotation marks, films. Remember films where they have a good story and it makes sense and you don't yell at the screen? And
the point here is that this 30-second I dated him is apparently a milestone.
They probably had to fight for weeks to get that.
They're quoted as saying, and this is the quote we have here, it is important for us to do as we did four of these films important to us, as we did for these films, sorry, I butchered that.
Yeah.
We wanted a gay character somewhere in them, somewhere in those four films.
Right.
We felt it was important that one of us play him to ensure the integrity and show it's so important to the filmmakers that one of us is representing that.
Okay, that's
essentially,
fair.
I get it.
Yeah.
But as a gay guy, yeah, looking, and even, I mean, about being younger and watching movies and being like, wow, like, whenever there's a romance, it's always the woman that's being swept off her feet, or it's always a cliche, and there's, you never see that on the screen. Yeah. There's actually a lot of TV shows now.
There's a few romantic comedies from the 90s where a woman is trying to attract the attention of a man, but that was then, and have backslid.
This is 2019.
Yeah.
They've done four of these movies.
Yeah.
And yet they think that showing up themselves and referring to a him counts as a diversity. I'm sorry, but that fails the whatever gay equivalent of Bechdel test there is.
Considering it's a Disney product, that is groundbreaking. Like, in the world of Disney, that's pretty, pretty groundbreaking. And that's as good as it gets. And again, if you want to see quality queer content, you're barking up the wrong tree because you're never going to see it.
Now,
like, you're still going to see, you know, effeminate, transparently gay villains in Disney movies for years to come.
Well, they've actually changed how, like, Jafar in Aladdin and Scar in the
Lion King. Yeah.
In the original formats, both of those characters were very, like, flouncy, very much, like, gay man-inspired.
Yeah.
And there's an archetype, well, you already know this, but for our audience, there's an archetype of the villains in Disney movies being coded or described as gay characters, almost like Ursula is based on
Divine,
yeah, the famous drag queen, you know. And but they've changed that. These new iterations of Disney have moved away from the satiring of gay quality or gay caricature in the movies, which is great. Now, I wanted to actually, this dovetails very nicely into something that Piers Morgan says. And a part of me, I mean, if ever there was a U-turn in the discussion.
Piers Morgan.
Yeah. So I despise the man. But what he took issue.
The best I can say about him is sometimes he says things where I agree with the spirit, but he still expresses the idea like a jerk. Sometimes he says things where it's like, I see what you're trying to say and I agree with what you're trying to say, but what you actually said makes you look like a dildo.
So what he said here, he's talking about a sandwich. The lettuce, guacamole, bacon, and tomato sandwich.
Yes.
Released by Marks and Spencer's.
Right.
And he says, he accuses of Marks and Spencer's of cynical virtue signaling, and it's being truly pathetic behavior. So they've made a rainbow decked out sandwich called the LGBT, the lettuce, guac, bacon, and tomato.
Yeah.
And it's really their attempt at sort of like, it's a bit tongue-in-cheek. Look, yeah, we have a gay sandwich.
If that came out in the States, I could view it a little bit more cynically. But British culture has a lot more camp to it. And they're a lot
more... We like sandwiches.
Well, they also love sandwiches. I mean, that's the birthplace of the modern sandwich as well. But
the Earl of
Sandwich. Earl of Sandwich, exactly. And a lot of their major chains occasionally come out with these hilarious, undermining, sort of, you know, cynical, hilarious little bits. Like, there was the... I mean, I know this is... I believe it's Denmark and not England, but, like, when the copyright passed on the Happy Meal, Burger King in Denmark changed their entire menu
to
be, like...
No, it was in Europe.
Happier than a Happy Meal.
McDonald's sued the Happy Mac or something in France, I think it was. And as a result of losing that court case over the IP... They lost the IP to Big Mac across Europe.
Yeah.
We talked about it on the show.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, you could order a less greasy Big Mac off a menu, and it was just like horrible.
They totally
like
made the fun of it.
But that's the kind of thing that I would I understand, like, there are times when you see that and you're like, oh, they're just poking fun. Like the entire Wendy's Twitter account is just poking fun.
I get that, but I think the issue here, to circle it back to that sort of virtue signaling, which I think is why I want to tie this story to the Avengers 30 seconds I dated him scene.
Yeah.
And the issue here is they've done, you know, lettuce, guac, bacon, and tomato, LGBT sandwich.
Right.
They say in the description, this is our way of... acknowledging, to show our support for pride is the language they use. Mm-hmm. So they've definitely drawn the link. And what Piers Morgan is saying is you're literally going, hey, look at us, we're pro-gay. You should buy money, you should spend your money with us because we're not homophobic. We're not Chick-fil-A, you know, come and buy our sandwiches.
If they made these sandwiches and plastered the town with ads, I could see that. But if it just showed up on their shelves one day and people saw it, went, like, that is not virtue signaling. That's just
But I disagree. I think that in modern culture, you aren't allowed to not be pro-gay. Like, there's a sort of a cultural stigma against being not actively pro-gay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, I honestly think that the Avengers Endgame was a cop-out. It was literally just a Hail Mary so that the gay audience doesn't lose their mind that after 22 movies in 10 years, they didn't have anybody gay. So the director themselves went gay for 30 seconds.
It's also something to solve it. When you put it into the international market, you can change the dialogue and the subtitles as well.
Anyway, but it's a huge point that, you know...
Like they did with Sailor Moon to make her straight instead of bisexual.
Well, I think it's virtue signaling. And I think this circles back to corporations marching in the Pride Parade. This is all about, you know... corporations, and Marvel is a massive corporation.
I never thought I'd see the day where I don't think something is virtue signaling and you think something is.
Well, I honestly believe, you know, this sandwich is literally them doing a rainbow out of lettuce, being like, look, we're pro-gay.
Well, like,
I got annoyed at the Doritos when they rebranded all of their chips.
If Marks and Spencer's advertise the LGBT all over town with a poster campaign, then I would 100% agree with you. But if it just showed up on the shelves one day, I don't know. It could just be somebody with a sense of humor. Also, I have had a lettuce, guac, bacon, and tomato sandwich before, and it's delicious.
Mm. It's a bit pricey for...
€4.45. Like, that's a lot.
Mm.
That's a lot for a sandwich. That's like, what, 9-ish Canadian?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. I would not pay that for a... Well, I mean, guac. People overcharge for guac. So, I mean,
this is true.
I guess that's about what you would expect.
Would you buy the LGBT sandwich? Let us know at Talk Angria. And we'd love to find out. We're going to be playing our first song. This is a song by Partner. They have two versions of it. The English one, which is Angel's Wings. And Les Ailes d'Ange. I don't know if I've butchered that or not. But which is the French version. It's their first time going into a bilingual track. The English version is only available on the CD, really.
Okay.
So we're going to be playing the French version, which they're kind of pushing out. And we'll be back just after this.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer medium. My name is still Luke Smith, and I am joined here by Hannah, of the executive director of the Ten Oaks Project. Thank you so much for coming and sitting with me. All of, what are we, 5 feet from each of our offices right now?
Yes, we are. We're office neighbors in our building.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I think what you've been working on is quite incredible. So for folks listening, I'm sure you can correct me, but you part of what you do is run a summer camp for LGBT youth and youth of LGBT folks, I believe. Mm-hmm. Similar to, I think, there's Camp Firefly out in BC. Mm-hmm. And there's a few other ones yep. around Canada. So if you want to know if there's something in your own area, just reach out and we can direct you. So why don't you tell us a little bit about sort of the raison d'etre of Camp Ten Oaks?
For sure. So we actually run 4 different summer camp programs. The biggest one and the longest running one is Camp Ten Oaks. And it's in a lot of ways a traditional summer camp if you've ever been or your kids have been. So there's you spend 1 week in the woods sleeping in cabins. There's a beautiful waterfront. We do out tripping. There's archery, crafts, a talent show, lots of silly camp songs and campfires and all of that. But the difference between us and other camp programs is the kids are all from 2S LGBTQ identities, communities, families. So when we started, it was a couple here in Ottawa, Holly and Julia Wagg, who were starting to think about creating their own family and were looking around and saying, you know, there's things for LGBTQ teens, there's things for adults, but there's nothing really for the kids from our families. And it's important that they have supports because they're going to be facing a lot of the things that we do. So what can we do? And they did a needs assessment and people said, we'd love a summer camp.
Yeah.
And here we are 15 years later. So over that time, we've grown a lot. We now have 2 weeks of Camp Ten Oaks every summer. We have a youth leadership development program called Project Acorn. We have a family camp called Oak Grove Family Camp. And then this past fall, we launched our newest program, which is called Camp Lifting Leaves. And it's a partnership with Children's Aid Societies across the province for kids who are from 2S LGBTQ communities and who are also either in care or have been in care. So that is the bulk of what we
and that's
do.
Quite a bulk. That's yeah. a lot going on right there. It makes me think of my sister who has a small child. I think he's about 3 now. I am a gunkle, a gay uncle. That's our yeah. official title. And she actually ended up going to a camp that was run through one of the local churches. And I mm-hmm. think that they do a lot of work with folks who are on low income.
Yeah.
But I mean, a part of that was there was a mandatory Bible session, I think.
Yeah.
And so there are camps out there, but they're often, maybe they're run by churches, in which yep. case as LGBT folks, our relationship with the church isn't stellar, mm-hmm. to say the least.
Yeah, well, I think it can be quite complicated, mm-hmm. right? And historically has been quite fraught. And I also know a lot of camps in Ontario who are religious camps who are doing amazing things around yeah. equity and inclusion. And we've had a lot of conversations with some of them and done some trainings. And then there's some who still have a long way to go. And I think it's also hard for queer and trans people if you don't know
Yeah.
And you have this fraught, complicated history, you might be quite hesitant mm-hmm. About approaching different camps. So that's definitely a piece of it. But I would also say there's other camps that are not religious based, or their background isn't that, who are also really struggling to be inclusive of queer and trans campers and staff and families. Mm-hmm. And they're public camps, they're private ones, but their focus isn't religion, but they don't know how to be inclusive and to how to structure things in their cabins, their bathrooms, their activities, and there's been lots of issues, and they don't quite feel like safe spaces for a lot of kids. So that's part of why we have Camp Ten Oaks and Project Acorn and on all our other camps, is so that there is a place for these folks.
Now, all of those kids that are going to the camps, you know, they're not all, you know, 12-year-olds who are identifying as trans or,
no.
10-year-olds who are gay. You know, some of them are I think the self-coined term, if I remember correctly, is queer spawn. So
yeah.
The children, which is a very lovely term, but it's the children of folks who are LGBT.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly what queer spawn is. And like anything in our community, some self-identify that way and others say, you know, I just have two moms, or another cute term I've heard, which I love, is queerlings.
Queerlings? I like that one. I might stick to that one.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. So then you've got parents who maybe are a little anxious and so on. So these are folks who, you work a lot with folks who have children who are mm-hmm. parents and build those connections. So my understanding is that you've teamed up with KIND, which is the LGBTQ service center here in Ottawa,
mm-hmm.
Similar to the ones that are just like the new one that opened up in Regina last week. Congrats mm-hmm. to you, those guys, and like the 519. And my understanding is that you're looking at launching a parenting group. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. We're actually launching it this Sunday. So it's going to be called Shaping Parenthood. And it is going to be a monthly discussion speaker series for folks who are from 2S LGBTQ communities and are contemplating parenthood and creating family. And all that entails. And it's been something that a few of us as organizers have been dreaming of for a couple of years. And then in the past year, we've really sat down and said, how do we make this happen? So we did a big survey last summer to ask folks in Ottawa, you know, if we were to do this, what would be really helpful and important. And we got some amazing feedback from them. And we've been working hard to put that into action since then. So we're going to be launching on Sunday with a community resource fair and a human library. So we've got about 30 different agencies from the Ottawa area that cover everything from the medical pieces of conceiving and preparing one's body for fertility and giving birth, to community agencies who support parents who work with young children, early childhood education. We have some lawyers coming. The Ottawa Birth Center is going to be there. The Ottawa Fertility Center. Yeah, there's going to be quite a range. So
the who's who of small humans.
For sure. So we've been trying to cover as much as we can while knowing there's still so much out there, and
mm-hmm.
people's time and capacity is limited, and our space is also limited. But all the different ways that you might be considering around creating your family. So is it that you want to adopt? Do you want to be a foster parent? Do you want to get pregnant yourself? Do you want to be looking at surrogacy? All of those pieces. And then once you have figured those out, what other supports do you need? So you probably will have to talk to a lawyer at some mm-hmm. point. You'll have to start thinking about healthcare services and birth plans and all of that.
I think that's kind of crazy that queer couples would have to look at speaking to a lawyer as sort of part of the course.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my brother actually, congrats to Ethan, his girlfriend just gave birth mm-hmm. this morning.
So oh wow, congratulations.
But I don't think they consulted with a lawyer you know, in that process, you know.
Yeah.
Is that something that, because you know, unlike sort of heterosexual couplings,
mm-hmm.
It's a little less straightforward for queer folks, that there are legal considerations?
For sure. And a lot of it really depends on how you're creating your family, right? It's perhaps sort of obvious that if you're adopting, you're probably going to need a lawyer because there's some legal pieces around moving from being a crown ward to being an adopted child. But there's also other considerations, and the laws in Ontario and in Canada are shifting. But there's still lots of considerations. So it wasn't until recently that you could have more than two parents on a birth certificate, and that those two parents weren't mom and dad. So what a lot of families were running into is, say it was a two-mom family and one of them gave birth to the child, the other one would have to adopt that child, mm-hmm. even though they'd, you know, maybe been together for years and were part of this whole process the whole time, and etc. And there's still a lot of questions around when folks are choosing to get pregnant, or when they're looking at surrogacy, around parental rights and custody. So if you're using a known donor, either sperm or eggs, there you have to do a donor agreement, and figuring out in that process, you know, what access is this person going to have at all? You know, is it just that they're donating their material, or is there going to be access later? Is there going to be shared custody? Is it going to be co-parenting? And the thing with those agreements is, even right now in Ontario, they won't necessarily stand up later in the court if they're challenged. And there has been several cases of that where, you know, somebody donated sperm and 7 years later comes back and says, actually, I would like to be accessing this child and sharing custody, and the child's parents are like, well, that was never the agreement. Yeah. And this changes a lot. So there's still a lot of sort of precarious stuff in there, which is why we have a couple of law firms coming on yeah. Sunday who specialize in this.
I mean, and it sounds quite incredible, because I know that you know, Ottawa has one of the highest rates of LGBT adoption in the country, mm-hmm. But all across the country, and you know, from Nunavut through to, you know, PEI, you know, everyone's, you know, queer folks are getting older, they're starting to settle mm-hmm. down, you know. There was a big study out in the US a couple of weeks ago that found that most gay people actually don't live in the village, in the middle of the cities. Yeah. You know, most gay people live in rural areas. They're in mm-hmm. the suburbs. They're in, you know, communities in the outlying areas. They're not all congregated, mm-hmm. you know, around, huddled around the painted pride flag in the downtown yes. intersection. Yeah. You know, and I think that's sort of where we're coming at. Canada's sort of maturing at a point now where the LGBT folks have, you know, we could 10 years of being able to get married, you know, mm-hmm. we've got, you know, we can work in the civil service without being mm-hmm. purged, which is a nice benefit. And there's access to rights. So surely our listeners are thinking, why is there a need for, mm-hmm. you know, more services and more specialized stuff? You know, is this added benefits to LGBT folks, or are we trying to level the playing field?
I would say we're trying to level the playing field. And I think we're talking about, there's, you know, when we look at laws that are changing, those are sort of some of the big picture, you know, legal protections around and equity and equality. And those are very important that those change. But even in spaces where on paper, it'll be the same if you're a straight couple or a queer couple, in practice, that's not true. So if you're going to see a lawyer, or with your family doctor trying to navigate fertility and having a child, and they're not well versed in some of the realities of what it is to live in a homophobic and transphobic world, mm-hmm. Maybe you're getting misgendered. There's lots of questions around, you know, well, you're going to have a mom and dad structure then, who will be the dad, what will you call each other, et cetera, et cetera. And that can be a really, really discouraging, really hard piece of trying to create a family as queer and trans folks. There's also been a lot of changes in the child welfare sector in Canada, but there is a history there of queer and trans people not being able to foster, not being able to adopt, and if they do have children and child welfare finds out, those children are removed. So that has changed, but in practice, what's it going to look like with the worker who constantly doesn't understand your family structure, or you know, all the forms that say mom and dad or things like that? So I think even when we have sort of equality on a formal scale, informally is where we're needing to see a lot more changes as well. And that's one of the things behind this group that we're going to be having for Shaping Parenthood, is having a space to have those conversations and say, these were the real struggles, and this is where, you know, more advocacy needs to happen, or I ran into that barrier and this is how I navigated it, and maybe that will work for you too. And similar to our camps, in my ideal world, we wouldn't need our camps, right? Yeah. Kids could go to any camp and they would be welcomed and included, and that would be the same in their schools. They wouldn't feel isolated. They wouldn't feel like their family was under scrutiny. But that's not the world we live in right now. And that's also not the fertility or the parenting world we live in. So I think having spaces for folks who are navigating mm-hmm. all of this is so important.
I think absolutely. In terms of people, you know, we're living in a world of, you know, I'm of an age where I haven't lived as an adult at a time where if I had a child, they'll be taken because I'm gay. And there's that sort of gay pedophile fear that permeates gay male history. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, I'm not a woman who had a child, but would risk losing it custody to the father because of a sexual perversion, i.e. being a lesbian. You know, there's a very long, cruel history in Canada mm-hmm. of LGBT parents having their children taken. So I can certainly see a sort of a legacy of reticence in terms of wanting to engage with these services. Mm-hmm. Is that sort of really key to bringing them all into one umbrella in terms of the fair and mm-hmm. and sort of reaching out? And for folks who maybe can't make it to your event tomorrow, how can they access parenting supports or mm-hmm. start having this conversation in their communities?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if they're in Ottawa or the surrounding area, I encourage them to get in touch with us. And this is, as I said, it's going to be an ongoing monthly discussion series. So each month we'll look at a different topic. So the next three that we have coming up, there's queering DIY conception, so different at-home methods. We're going to have one in July on assisted reproduction, and then in August is going to be around surrogacy. So there will be ongoing opportunities. I would also encourage them to figure out, if they're in other communities, what is around there for queer and trans support. So like you mentioned, the 519 in Toronto, or different community health centers in their area, sort of doing some digging and seeing what's there, but also asking some good questions at services that they're trying to access, like, have you served LGBTQ clients mm-hmm. before? What's your experience with you know, as a lawyer with two mom families or two dad families, and all of those pieces, and then reaching out to either us or to the different services in their area to help navigate them.
You know, it reminds me of a time I was living with my roommate, Heather. Our longtime listeners will know that she was did our Horny with Heather segments, and there was a moment, and this is a bit of a side anecdote, but there was a moment where her and her husband were, I think they just not long been married, were saying, oh, I need to go buy condoms. And I was thinking to myself, now, Heather's a sexual health advocate. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, surely, Heather, you know, your monogamous relationship, surely you know each other's, you know, sexual health status. And, mm-hmm. and you know, there's no, you know, infection risk that you should be worried about. And I, honest to God, had completely forgotten about pregnancy. Like, it just, she looked at me and she was like, babies. And I honestly had forgotten that they exist. You know, and that's because it's not my reality. I don't, you know,
me and... It's not a potential outcome of sex for...
It's not a potential outcome.
Trans people.
For myself and Jake, anyway. And, but no, I completely forgot about it. But what I think it amplifies, or sort of exemplifies, is that for, you know, straight couples out there, having to think about, will my parenthood be challenged and taken away? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, how am I going to you know, find the money to ship sperm in from the States. And, you know, these things just aren't in their reality. So it's certainly a bit of a moment of going like, huh, wow, there's
absolutely
there's
and
to
I
it.
Also I also think there's points where empathy can be built based on your own experiences. So if you struggle with your mental health, considering, you know, will my children potentially be taken away is something you may have considered if things get quite bad, and, you know, might not have to pay for sperm to be shipped for the States, but you might if you're struggling with infertility and decide to go that route, or you have a kid with higher needs and it is not covered by your healthcare in your province or territory and need to do that. So There's a lot of overlap and in intersection and a lot of space for empathy and relating to one another.
Well, thanks for taking the time to come and chat with us. We will be sharing the information and links to this on our website, www.canqueer.news. And also they can find out the information on your website, which is...
It's tenoaksproject.org.
Excellent. And we'll be back just after this.
Great. Thank you.
Last night, pre-flight, 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then. I miss the earth so much, I miss my life. It's lonely out in space on such a timeless flight. Ain't the kind of place to raise your kids. In fact, it's cold as hell, and there's no one there to raise them. If you did, and all this science I don't understand. It's just my job 5 days a week. Or I can't.
Sure enough, it's obviously it's not 100% a perfect Elton John copy, because everybody has their own little fingerprint with their voices, and there's a few people who can imitate other people. Mm-hmm. Like when Robin first came out, I just thought it was Kate Bush doing house tracks for some reason. You can have two singers sound alike. It's not impossible. And he doesn't sound exactly like Elton John, but he has that Elton John feel that makes me just like totally comfortable. And I don't know if I put down the $73.42 to go to the theater and sit in a dark room.
You're going in on a Tuesday? Or
yeah, that's the matinee, and then pay $50 for a Coke and a small popcorn.
Yeah,
I don't know if I'd be willing to do that, but I am looking forward to seeing it in some format or another. Mm-hmm. So...
We just before Taron Egerton's Rocket Man, we had the interview with Hannah from the Ten Oaks Project talking about parenthood. I think that was a really interesting discussion. But we are going to move on because we have a couple of other news stories that we want to talk about.
But it is interesting, just as one little addition, that I know this is American data, but there was a recent study where they actually looked at, and I know I've mentioned in the past, LGBT people who live in the countryside.
I mentioned that in the interview.
In America. And they found that like something like a third of the same-sex families in America live in the country, mm-hmm. which just alarmed everyone. And I don't know what Canada's numbers are like, but it's...
So I wanted to kick off with an incident that emerged at the corner of Church and Wellesley in Toronto. Now, for those who... Really, this is a beautiful... It's like, you know, I literally 5 minutes ago was telling Hannah, you know, all the gays don't live in the village.
Yeah.
But that's where people go to rile us up. You know what I mean? If like, if I'm going to find a homo, go to the gay village, stand outside a gay bar. You're bound to run into one of them.
Toronto has three or four neighborhoods you can go to, though. Like, you can also go to Queen West. You can also go to the beaches.
What would people know if they Googled gay people Toronto?
Fair enough,
it'd be the village.
Church and Wellesley,
so,
for sure.
A preacher, and I'm using really broad air quotes here, set up a little booth and decided to preach that God loves everybody, and sort of that's the start of it. It goes significantly downhill from there.
Okay, because I was going to say, so far it sounds okay. You know, it it could go in multiple directions with this. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, so there's an incident that erupted. A preacher was denouncing homosexuality as sinful.
Okay.
The various homosexuals in the immediate area took issue to that particular description. The people filed multiple phone calls to the police.
Okay.
The 519 issued several phone calls to the police. Apparently the police didn't show up until over half an hour at the earliest, until after the phone calls were issued. So according to the 519, at about 4:45 p.m., two people came to the corner with a microphone and were spilling hate speech. A lot of people were upset by that. Apparently, what's really interesting is that it got into some fisticuffs. There was pushing, shoving, you know, some violence. One person left in an ambulance. We don't know the state of their injuries right now. But what I wanted to talk about, you know, a half-hour response is not great from the Toronto police.
It
after
isn't.
Multiple phone calls.
Yeah.
Because there was a number of people calling in to the Toronto police reporting this incident, escalating violence. Now,
do we know what time of day it was?
It was about just shy of rush hour. Well, it would have been at rush hour, 4:45 p.m.
Okay. So, I mean, I could see, you know, 15-20 minute delay, but half an hour. I mean, 10 minutes is a big time gap when you're talking about the police showing up. And Church and Wellesley isn't a part of Toronto where traffic does not physically move for a period of time. But there's bike cops in the area. They still have foot patrol. Like, somebody could have walked over. Somebody could have biked over. And half an hour is quite long. Long. Even, like, if it was 20 minutes, I'd be willing to forgive.
The Toronto Police Service said it was half an hour. The community is obviously saying it was much longer.
Oh.
So, you know,
okay.
Err on the side of what the police are willing to say it took them to get there.
Which is still quite long, even for that time of day. That is a long,
you know,
way.
So the LGBT cop liaison there has said that they're aware, they're looking out to it, will be there available to support people impacted, like, the next day.
Right.
And I think this is really the issue, is that the Toronto Police Service has been accused of not taking crimes against the LGBT community seriously. Most extremely with the investigation over Bruce MacArthur and the fact that people were saying there's a serial killer. Cops weren't acknowledging that there was one, and then, lo and behold, there was a serial killer. Now, right on the edge of that raw experience of the Toronto Police Service not taking them seriously, you know, a bunch of people phone up, there's a hate preacher, you know, there's violence escalating, can you come and sort them out? They're literally in the gay village saying that gay people are the worst and so on. You know, it's, can you come and help? And it's over half an hour, you know, in that entire time the community is just trying to not have...
is that escalate half an hour from when the preacher showed up or from when the first person called?
Presumably from when the first person called.
Okay.
But it doesn't help the Toronto Police Service's reputation.
They have a serious optics problems. And normally when people have an optics problems, I roll my eyes and like, are they doing their job? Yes or no. But like when it comes to someone like the police, where public trust is a part of their functionality and optics problems, a huge deal. So like with the Bruce MacArthur thing, it turned out that they were involved in a multi-million-dollar dragnet and that they had identified Bruce MacArthur very early in the process, but because of various reasons, they had to keep it hush-hush, secret-secret. And it turned out they were doing it for all the right reasons, but then afterwards they did nothing to deal with the public, to apologize, to say, look, we were doing what we had to do to make it happen. There's a lot where, and this is something that I've been noticing, there's a lot where the police are doing the right thing, but they're not sharing information with anyone. So the only thing you can do is assume they're doing either the wrong thing or nothing at all. They're not communicating. And there's going to be a few exceptions, like the various park busts and the bathhouse busts and things that are very pseudo illegal that the police are kind of in the right to do. But there's things like they're not sharing information. Like, if you want the police to show up, you know, just don't really say, like, there is violence happening at this corner, and don't talk about it. I don't know.
I've interviewed some folks in Toronto who are, you know, affected by this, and they told us, why would we bother calling them?
Yeah.
Because even if they do show up, you know, it was people of color I was talking to, they're like, well, they're more likely to arrest me than the people who have mugged me or whatever. And it's that's the sense, that's the relationship they have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And then when multiple people call and they don't show up, I don't know, it's not looking good for them. I want to leave on a slightly more optimistic note, though, for the show. Verizon Communications bought Tumblr off of Yahoo. I think it was Yahoo that owned it briefly. I forget. Anyways, but Verizon, who I think actually maybe owns Yahoo, I forget. Verizon owns Tumblr now, is really where this is going.
Yeah.
And as I'm sure our listeners would recall, Tumblr under Verizon, when they bought it, decided to ban pornography.
Well, adult content.
Adult content. Now,
because something could be adult content without being porn.
Mm-hmm. But Tumblr had become kind of this safe haven of obviously some not great stuff.
Yeah.
But really the safe haven of depictions of LGBT sexuality in all the ways that is captured.
Yeah.
And it was a place for the community to go where they could see content that reflects who they are and what they like. Until they banned it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unsurprisingly, Tumblr's views dropped like a stone.
Well, their value dropped like a stone. Which, now that it's bargain basement prices, that's cheap for the buying, and who's going to buy them out? Or who's talking about buying them out?
Well, it was quite funny, because apparently Pornhub is in discussions looking at buying them out. I think they bought Tumblr for, I want to say it was closer to $1 billion. It was, it was huge money. Let me have a look at that. That's all we have time for, though, I'm afraid. It was, of course, they bought out Yahoo for $4.6 billion, who had in turn bought Tumblr for $1.1 billion. But alas, now it's only worth about $230 last we checked. Now, we can't really dive into the story much more than that because we've run out of time. We're playing out with Will's Open Up, Babe. I've been Nick Smith. Thanks for listening.
know what you're thinking. Would you let me know if you're hurting? Oh, it's so hard for me to reach into your heart that's pounding the night away. We don't need no words to say, but that's alright. Just try to like a river streaming through the roughest places you can ever find. Outgrow all the things you thought you knew, you left it all behind. There is something about this feeling when I look into your eyes. You light up my life. Oh, oh. Open up, babe. So in the zone. Open up, babe. Are you ready to let go? Just like the ocean, deep into freaking. Just like emotions, deep into moving connect. Just like the ocean, deep into freaking. Just like emotions, deep into moving connect. You let go. Hey, is it okay if I hold your hand so we can dance into Wonderland? Lost in time, nobody when it's over. Oh, I know it's scary sometimes. Everything's gonna be alright. Alright. Streaming through the roughest places you can never find. Outgrow all the things you thought you knew, you left it all behind. There is something about this feeling when I look into your eyes. You light up my life. Open up, babe. So in the zone. Open up, babe. Are you ready to let go? Just like the ocean, deep in the freaking. Just like emotions, deep in the moment connect. Just like the ocean, deep in the freaking. Just like emotions, deep in the moment connect. Just like emotions.